Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. In this episode, Eamon Boyle and Garth Gilmore go down memory lane, covering 20 years of changes in software development. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Let's take a seat here.
Yes.
And I have absolutely no plan whatsoever.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
Whatsoever.
Yeah. I was just thinking bringing three old men together.
Yeah.
Yes.
Talking about how beautiful everything was back then.
Speak for yourself. I'm a young buck.
Sorry. Two old men.
Yes. No, I am old. I am happy to admit I am old.
Yes.
But no, I mean, it's an interesting topic, how much things have changed over the years. I mean, I would always say that the biggest change is whenever I started, it was in Solaris in the office, and it was a commercial C++ compiler, and it was the rogue wave C++ libraries, if you remember those, which cost real money. But, you know, there was no way you could go home and train on what you were using in the office. You know, everything was commercial, everything cost real money. Whereas these days, everything you can get from open source, or there's a community edition, or, you know, so you can get better on the technologies you use at work in your own time. And I think that's a tremendous change for the better. You know?
So it is for the better that now you can work from home. So now you're not done when you leave home.
Well, that's the dark side.
That one depends on where you are in life. So for me, that's actually, I'm okay with that, because when I go down to take a coffee break, I can see my kids and I can see my wife.
Yeah.
As soon as the day is over, I'm playing with my kids and chatting to my wife. So for me, it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But I know some of the young guys, younger, I should say, because I'm still young. Some of the younger guys, you know, like at their stage of life, they want to be in the office, they want to be socializing. The social aspect of work is very, very important, and both for them growing in their career, but also just for living. I mean, I remember whenever I was young and working in companies, like, we were going out after work all the time, we were going for meals, we were doing this and that. Mm-hmm. So I can understand for them it's very different, but for me it's suiting my lifestyle where I am right now, you know. And I don't mind the fact some people have trouble. They're like, okay, but my home is now my office and I can't get away from my office. But I don't know, I never really switched off totally. I still always check my mail and would do work. And we all have laptops, so the laptop was always there anyway.
Yeah.
So now I just have a better desk at home. That's really the only difference.
I possibly have a very unhealthy lifestyle because, you know, I started out with a philosophy degree. So I was mostly self-taught in IT. And I always felt under pressure in the office because I wanted to stay on and kind of teach myself some of this stuff. But everybody was leaving the office, you know. So it's great being able to do self-education at home, even if that's not entirely healthy, you know. And then I was self-employed for 10 years. So you get into the habit of doing 15 minutes of work and then 15 minutes of family and going backwards and forwards. And I don't even think about it anymore. You know, I may keel over from a coronary and then I may think about it at that point. So I don't know if it's an entirely healthy way to work, but definitely from 10 years of freelancing, I got used to half an hour of, really focused, you know, coding or courseware development or, you know, whatever I was doing. And then half an hour of family time and just going backwards and forwards.
But starting with Solaris, that means that you're very young and new in this game, doesn't it? When was that?
Late 90s, I think. I started in about 95, I think. But when I first went to college, you know, so I did a master's in IT after my philosophy degree. So I think it would be like 97 or something like that was my first job. But I did. Solaris was the first version of Unix I used commercially anyway. So
I was in Nortel in 2000. So I remember again, so I think a lot of things are better now. So I remember starting there and being 3 weeks without a machine. And just having to read books because they hadn't a machine for me, and learning their internal proprietary language, because you know, you don't take an off the shelf language, you write your own.
Terrible thing.
Protel. So by the end of the 3 weeks, I knew that language inside out, and then they sent me on a training course. But I had, like, you know, I'd learned the language, and so I was asking all the corner case questions.
So you knew version one of that language.
I knew, like, the language, and I just had a backlog of tricky questions, because those were the bits that I couldn't get from the manual. So yeah, I'm sure now as a professional trainer, I would have hated myself, because it's like, you know, day one, we're here to teach you this language, and like, start off with the tricky questions. So I would have hated myself back then. So now, yeah, as Garth says, like, now you just have equipment and build times and tooling and documentation, all of these things, it just allows you to get productive really, really quickly. And the attitude, I find, well, again, it does depend on the company, but certainly for the company we work for, like, the attitude is very supportive and about bringing people along and educating people and giving them all the information that they need. And it's different than I think years ago when I started.
If you think back to the 90s, if you were doing, just to pick on Microsoft, because I worked for, you know, Microsoft partner company originally, but you remember you had to get the MSDN CDs, you know, the Microsoft documentation came in the CDs, and there were updates every few months, and you ended up with a pile of CDs this high, you know, and if you weren't an MSDN subscriber, you didn't get the special knowledge. And then there was Microsoft Systems Journal, MSJ, it was originally, and then it became MSDN Magazine, and then all the books and so on. So if you didn't have that information, whereas these days, I mean, you could in theory put somebody in a room with just them and you know, give them a decent laptop and an internet connection and put food under the door, you know, and if they were sufficiently motivated, you know, they could come out after 18 months or 2 years with all the skills they needed to be a developer, just from online tutorials, just from the open source and community editions. But they would be able to train themselves up in exactly the same frameworks and IDEs and libraries and so on that they were using in the workplace. I'm not saying I'd do it that way, but you know, the fact that it is actually possible, I think, is a tremendously good thing. So.
But the other side of the world, the sun world, the Solaris part, that was not different. You could be sun certified this and that. They had a whole list of certifications.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That was just the same as the MSDN CD.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm just picking on Microsoft because I remember the MSDN CDs sitting in a big rack in the corner of the office. But absolutely, I mean, Solaris was worse. You know, I remember thinking, could I get Solaris at home? You know, and looking it up, and it went, yes, you can get a Solaris laptop for a mere $15,000 or $20,000.
Yes,
you know, and I was
yes.
like, oh, okay, maybe not.
Yeah. But there's still, I mean, today there's still money to be made. There's still gold in them there hills. You know, you can get your Scrum certification. You can
That's the same thing.
That's still the same, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, there's still people who look for those. I mean, for us, we're always looking for capabilities rather than the pieces of paper. So we're even hiring people who don't have degrees, but they just have the passion for it. They're self-taught. As long as they can do the job, that's the most important thing, you know. Mm-hmm. They're enthusiastic and they're thinking logically and they're a team player, then come on board.
It will be interesting to see where it goes with the cloud, because, you know, I worry about there's a scenario where we go back to where we were before, where, you know, at the moment you could self-educate yourself in Java or C# or .NET or whatever. And of course, you can get like an Azure or an AWS account and so on. But modern architectures are made up of so many interconnected services, you know, that there's kind of toy serverless learning and then there's real serverless learning. So I'm worried that we get to a stage where you can only do real serverless learning, you know, at scale in the office. You know, that's the only practical way to do it. So I don't think we're there yet, but I think that's a danger. You know.
But if you look through history, it has always been client-server-based architecture, and then everything should be desktop and one single computer, and suddenly again it should be client-server.
But that's it, you know, we aren't so good at predicting the future. That's why it's... You can have ideas, but it's not, you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket, because who knows what's around the corner. I mean, we don't see what happens with quantum, you know. I mean, that still hasn't really become mainstream yet, but if there is a major breakthrough, and we find sort of standard applications for these things, that would be, again, a paradigm shift in our in our industry. Yes. So these things, you know, the unknown unknowns, you don't know what's going to happen. So I just try to enjoy myself along the way.
Yeah, you can only predict the future from your current context.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why we tend to laugh at Star Wars movies.
Yes.
Because it's like the early 80s technologies just predicted it into some future.
I was watching Terminator with my kids recently, and and it's like in the 90s that the world ends, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. It's like the late 90s that the machines take over, and I'm like, still waiting.
but I think product management has suddenly become such an important thing because the users are starting to catch up with us because we haven't had a platform shift, you know, because everything went to the web and then everything went to mobile and then everything went to the cloud and then there hasn't been a real major platform shift, you know. So clients are starting to expect quality features and interactivity and proper design and so on, which means we need a platform shift really soon.
Yes.
And energy consumption might be something that makes us think a little bit again, because we're using such managed languages now. You know, you have your JavaScripts and your Pythons and these kinds of things, and to a lesser extent the JVM and .NET languages, but that is less efficient. So maybe there'll be a paradigm shift where we say, okay, this energy problem's a real problem and we need to start writing more efficient code and we need to start getting back to native, and things like Rust could become the mainstay. I mean, who knows?
Or it goes the other way and we go up a level where everything's completely managed in our behalf. You know, any time performance comes up, there always seem to be two arguments. And the first argument is take absolute control, you know, understand what's going on at the low level and work efficiently. And then the other argument is give up control completely, you know, have a runtime that efficiently manages everything for you. So I agree, we could go one way or we could go the other.
And then, of course, you have things like serverless, which, you know, gives us massive scalability and better utilization of limited resources. So these things could be the other way that we manage the problem. You know? Yeah. Everything goes to the cloud.
But does it actually end up being more efficient in the long run when you've got, you know, a cloud of thousands and thousands of services out there and you don't know entirely what you're doing and you can't claim it's optimized and you end up with things running for longer than you thought they'd be running for, or distributed databases you can't turn off.
No, you just accept that things are happening outside of your comfort zone, basically. I remember you once told me that you started out way before that with the good old
The Spectrum 48K. Well, that was the thing. I went in and out of programming, so I taught myself to program when I was 12, 13, something like this, with the Spectrum 48K the rubber keys and so on.
Amazing machine. We tried. We were actually looking at if we could get Sir Clive Sinclair to come and talk at the conference some years ago.
Yes.
But I guess that chance is...
Sadly, he's passed away now. Yeah. So, amazing man. Amazing.
Yes.
I had the Amstrad. I was a 64K Amstrad.
Yeah.
With the 128K boost on the back, the expansion pack.
What processor was that?
I'm not sure. It was... we had the 464. I can't remember what the processor was.
But it was in
the Z81, was it? Maybe.
No, the Z80, that was the Spectrum family.
Yeah, but so I think Amstrad, it might have been, was it a different chip?
Yeah, was it a 6510?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
But he...
I can't remember.
I guess whoever watches this, they have no clue what we're talking about.
Fix it in post. Yes. Let's look it up. Yeah. Okay, let's record one where we say it's every chip that we know, and then whichever one is right, we'll add it into the video.
But that's how I started to program that.
Yes.
But were you doing assembly or were you doing it in BASIC?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Should I be excited or afraid of AI? The answer is yes, it's both.
Things are going to look so different in the next couple years. You will not be ready for the disruptions that are going to come.
I'm Jeff Nielsen, host of Digital Disruption, the go-to podcast for technology leaders.
Our generation's conflict, I think, is going to be emotional, not economic.
The companies that are going to win are the ones that have a couple of characteristics.
Stay ahead of the curve with Digital Disruption, available now on your favorite podcast platform.
Well, it started out in BASIC, and then I quickly moved into assembler because the Commodore 64, the BASIC was so basic.
Yeah,
the
BASIC
was so limited, so you needed to know the memory map of the machine.
So you just went into that. No, I remember sitting until 3 a.m. with all the lights off, and my parents thought I was asleep, and I was there typing in for Space Invaders.
And if you made one error, it's...
Well, that was the thing. I tried to run it, and it said syntax error at line 30, and I went, what's a syntax error? You know, and that was the beginning of my programming career.
Lines and lines of data.
Yeah,
that was a good part when it was those typing in the numbers. And if you were lucky, whoever created that has made a kind of a checksum. But maybe not.
Oftentimes not. Yeah. And it just wouldn't work. And you're like, okay, let's start going through these numbers. You know, you get your brother to call out the numbers as you're like going across, you know.
But even then, you remember you had like the wars where the Spectrum people hated the Commodore people, and then everybody hated the BBC Micro people because that meant your parents were posh, you know, and you'd had it bought. But even then, within the Spectrum community, you know, in the UK, there were the people who read Sinclair User, and then there were the people who read Crash, and they were just gamers, you know, and they weren't to be associated
Amstrad
with
Action. Action. That was where it was at.
Yeah.
But the BBC Micro still is a better keyboard than the new MacBook, which is proper keyboard. You knew you were pressing keys back in those days.
I remember doing the computer class at school and being outraged to discover that the BASIC of the BBC Micro was different from the BASIC of the Spectrum, and it was like,
BBC BASIC?
Yes, exactly. That was not good.
I did a project in school in BBC BASIC.
Mm-hmm.
It was very good. Yeah. And then I started offering off my services to other people in the class. That was my first consulting gig. Was in school helping people program their BBC BASIC programs.
Yeah. But you remember they did the 30th anniversary of the BBC Micro, and they did it on the BBC News, and the number of people who rang in to say, we're still doing ours, you know, well, we still do our monthly accounts on the BBC Micro. And it's, what?
So, but I mean, nowadays, the you know, that was our way to get into programming. But nowadays, there's so much out there. You know, that's why I think I have nostalgia and I wouldn't change anything. But nowadays, things are better. You have Cohen's online, so you can just go on. Mm-hmm. You have in-browser interpreters, partially written programs. You fill in the gaps.
Yeah,
you know, if anyone has a passion for this industry, they can. They can get into it, you know.
I still have a feeling that back then you were closer to the machine room
for sure. Yeah,
and it actually helps me today.
Yeah,
but I don't know if you need it. If you actually need it, if you start today.
Well, I think it definitely gives you a better understanding of what's happening. So, like, even when you're working with managed languages, and some languages are closer to the metal than others. Like, so for example, in C#, you know, in the latest versions in C# 8 and 9, like, you can do stack allocs. So you can allocate small arrays on the stack frame, so you don't have to do garbage collection, and you know, you're getting references to pointers, and you can make copies of arrays, but they're not copies, they're just references into the structures. So, you know, all that stuff that I remember doing when I like worked with pointers and stuff, like, that all still is applicable today.
But do you actually know how that works if you don't have that basic understanding of the memory and memory map? And
I think you can learn it, but most people don't have to learn it.
But if you want to be really efficient, dealing with pointers and allocating on the stack and in the heap and whatever.
Yeah,
I would claim you need to know what it is.
You do, and I think in those professions, you know, if you're doing games or you're doing high performance or you're doing, you know, these sorts of things, you'll have to do it because that's part of your job, is you have to understand that, you know, contiguous memory is better, and, you know, skipping garbage collections or allocating up front, or you're working on hardware with limited resources, you just have to. But in our industry, if we look at like the percentage of jobs where that is what people are doing, it's a tiny fraction.
The noise
that we hear, or the talks that we hear, the work that we hear people are doing is not this kind of thing. Most people are building REST APIs and front ends, and, you know, or simple mobile apps. So that's not what people need for you know, most of the jobs that are out there, but it's still super fun.
It does annoy me as an educator, though, that, you know, computer science is what you do at university and then it stops, you know, and there's any number of courses that you can do in industry, but it's new languages, new frameworks, agile project, you know, techniques, all this kind of stuff. But you're going to find it very hard to book a course in algorithms or something like that, or the mathematics of computer science or whatever, you know. So academics here, experts in these things, don't venture into industry, and people from industry don't venture into academia. You know, it seems like there's a big wall there that's very hard to cross, which is a shame.
But it's interesting though, because we were down in the bookstore downstairs, and like the Gang of Four book is still there.
I saw they were piling up, and I saw that this morning, and I thought, are you still selling this?
If there was ever a book that needed to be rewritten, it's that book. It's the way all the examples start with. Let's say you were writing a word processor. Yeah. No. Let's not. You know.
So. But it's got the little tassels, so you can mark your page. I love it. It's like a Bible or something. But there's algorithm books and things like this as well. So it's still out there, and people still love this kind of things. But it's a smaller percentage of our industry. You know, we were talking earlier, and our industry is everywhere. It runs everything. So every company is an IT company. Mm. So, of course, maybe the things that, you know, that we learned growing up, you know, when it was more niche, are still niche today, because the demand is still, you know, a small percentage of what the world needs right now. And what the world needs is lots of websites and mobile apps and REST services and lots of plugging things together, but it's not the same. It's still necessary work. I still prefer the fun of these other things. So
does annoy me though when people use it as an excuse, you know, when they say, well, why didn't somebody learn this at college? And you go, well, we're a very varied industry, you know, but you don't get that in other kinds of architecture. You know, I'm sure an architect doesn't get employed to build a skyscraper and say, oh, I've only ever done bridges in the past, sorry, you know. So maybe it's time we segmented the industry better and split it up into different subgroups
in some way. Yeah. Well, that's why I like the ideas of quantum computing and the state of that now, because that forces me to drive back to the basics, understand what is a gate, what can you do with it. And I think that's a wonderful chance to
reboot on the ground floor. It is fascinating, and every time though that I've looked at it, it has completely fried my brain. So again, maybe I'm too old now, all my experience is weighing me down. So we need someone who's like an empty vase, who will just drink that up, you know.
So what we need to do is get rid of you and hire a really smart 16-year-old kid.
That's it, you know, like it'll be my son who will like be tinkering with some, you know, late at night on some free quantum computer, and then he will get those fundamentals, and you know.
Yeah, but imagine if you could move back to 1948, look at what was a computer back then.
It would be
just the same. It would completely fry your brain, as you just put it. Because you didn't have a programming language, that you programmed these by combining NAND gates with wires. It's completely the same.
But now you see, because that's the thing, so I'm now biased and skewed by my experiences. So if I had to go back and do that, I would be like, oh, I'm so unproductive, you know. I don't have IntelliJ autocomplete for these games.
I don't think they had it.
You know, I don't think so. I would feel like, oh, this is too hard. This is too, you know.
Yeah, but that's the difference, because back then, those that could program the thing, that was the engineer that built it. He was the only one. The formal software educations, we didn't have them until, I guess, the 70s.
And that's the thing. So, you know, now the next generation won't have to do the things that we did necessarily, but they'll still be productive and they'll still be doing hard problems, but they'll just be different problems, you know, and they won't be held back by the fact that they didn't do what we did in the same way as we weren't held back because we didn't design circuits and work with gates directly. And
well, I mean, we see this right now. I mean, we train a lot of graduates, and you see some people who've done like a pure computer science degree, and they've done like 3 or 4 years of Haskell. You know, that's been their main language, and they solve everything in a purely functional way. And you're trying to show them a for loop, and they're like, "What is this mad, crazy voodoo? You know, take this away from me, old man." You know, and you're going to have people who went straight out of college and into an AWS job or something like that, and you give them a problem, and they'll see it as a, you know, a cloud native solution, as a bunch of things deployed out there on the server. Mm-hmm. So that's the perspective that you're brought up with that, you know, affects so much how you view a particular problem.
Yeah. So. Well, this is where the circle comes complete now, because you mentioned that you were a philosopher.
Yes. Yes.
In the very early days, and this is pure philosophy now.
Oh yes.
Because that is actually how society works. Mm-hmm. That we accumulate knowledge, so we don't have to teach each and every generation from
from zero.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stand on the shoulders of giants.
Yes, exactly. Giants like us.
Yeah. Although I'm always fond of the saying that you spend the first 20 years of your life accepting everything you're told. Yeah. You spend the second 20 years of your life realizing everything you were told is wrong, you know, and then you spend the third 20 years of your life working out what you're going to teach the next generation that they will come to despise you for. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do.
Yes.
I think I've just like, I've sort of accepted this, and then I'm just trying to steer my career and try to do the things that I enjoy, because you know, you just got to pick the things that you enjoy and go after them, and even if that is not the most popular framework or the most popular technology, just whatever you find fun, because life's short, enjoy it.
Absolutely.
That really displays our position in this world, the privilege. The privileges that we have.
Yeah.
So we are inventing our own problems by saying, I don't like that programming language, I prefer that over that.
Absolutely.
Imagine what other people have to struggle with every day.
We should be super, super grateful.
Because
this profession, you're it's doing incredibly well, but it's also really enjoyable and is, you know, incredibly sought after
now. We're spoiled kids.
We really are.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that's okay, as long as you don't get complacent and form a bad attitude over it. I think as long as you're grateful and sort of realize it and remember it every day, I think then that's fine.
But I think you also have to acknowledge how much stress there is in the IT industry as well, because I mean, it's especially in the current environment. I mean, a lot of the companies that we worked with as software development companies, they had the privilege that they could keep going, you know. Mm. But on the other hand, you know, the pandemic was happening around them, and they were still continuing doing their day-to-day 9-to-5 job remotely, you know, trying to pair program over the network and so on. And that imposed all kinds of stresses on them as well. So
Maybe we need someone to shake us from time to time.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a good old-fashioned pandemic. Yeah.
No, well, I think
where were you in March? March 2019.
But I think if you go far enough in IT, everybody ultimately becomes a philosopher. If you look at the keynote, one of the best keynotes I have ever seen to a conference, you know, that we had yesterday, that was stunning. But that was a work of philosophy.
Yes,
you know,
wasn't it?
And if you look at what Kevlin Henney, you know, likes to talk about, and Dan North likes to talk about, and so on, there's an awful lot of philosophy in there as well. So I think if you stay in any industry long enough, you get more and more obsessed with distilling everything down to the most fine, basic, straightforward, primitive atomic principles that you can, and refining things and trying to pass something on and trying to raise the level of consciousness and understanding and so on. So eventually you will end up doing something that counts as philosophy. You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just got there early. You know,
you guys are
all late. You're all late to the party.
Exactly.
Yes. If only I could code, yes.
It'll come eventually. You just need a good teacher.
Yes, exactly. I need to find somebody to teach me to code.
Yes.
That was good fun.
Wasn't it?
Yes, brilliant. Thank you so much.
Cool. You know, thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.